Howdy, everybody. This is Mark. I am the Prepper Guy. What I was thinking of doing was putting together some tidbits, because I do get random splashes of coherent thoughts once in a while, and no reason to make a whole podcast on some of the things that need to be kind of lightly discussed from time to time and make a whole 30, 40-minute podcast over it. So, therefore, what day is it?
Hump day! Yeah!
Hi, my name is Mark. I'm the Prepper Guy, and this is a Prepper Guy podcast. In a world that's always changing and full of fear and confusion, and especially when it comes to prepping, I am a minimalist, and I like to be ready for anything that life may throw at us, whether it's bad, the end of the world, or just a flat tire on a deserted road. So what I was thinking the other night, I watched the debates. That was interesting. And I thought, you know, if I was an artist, I could take that scene from when they're all standing on the stage before it all begins, and then zombify them all so they all looked like zombies. And then we could call it the premiere of The Talking Dead, because it seemed to be, now I know a lot of it was the debate structure that they had set up to where it was like, well, we'll ask so-and-so a question and say, this guy says you're an idiot, what say you? Donald Trump said this about you. What do you think about that? And it was kind of like a bunch of badgering of kids on a school ground trying to start a fight. And they tried to rise above it a little bit and talk about the subject, but it's hard when people are so into how they feel about this country and how it should be run that they, you know, took the red meat and they dug into the debate and started arguing about Trump's this and, you know, Rand Paul shouldn't be on the stage. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was really quite annoying debate format. But then what do you expect from CNN, you know, and having a bunch of Republicans on the stage? It's just kind of mindless, but I guess that's how it works, because we have chosen in this country to have divided parties. And so most of the media is against conservative thinking, and the rest of them are against liberal thinking, and then everyone's against just thinking. So I just thought, you know, boy, that just looks like the Talking Dead series or something. But the debate seemed to lack a lot of substance, because as an American, I would really much rather if somebody said, so-and-so called you a monkey's uncle and you're stupid and your tie is dopey and you have a funny looking face, to just go, oh, okay, well, that's nice. What I'd like to do for this country is, you know, maybe, we all have a lot of ideas, and I could throw some of mine out there. But the simple fact is, it would be nice to hear some of the people that are vying for the job of president to rise above that kind of schoolyard just banter and just go, well, here's what I'd like to do. You know, we have a lot of people on welfare in this country, and unfortunately, we have X amount of dollars to take care of the poor people, and we find that 70-80% of those people are abusing the system. So if we could get half of them kicked to the curb, we could give at least the other half twice as much money, because the whole reason we have welfare is to help the poor and the needy. See, that would be good. And then if somebody goes, well, give us some details, you could kind of go into some details and just forget the BS of, you know, someone called you stupid. Because that, it's just, I don't know. I was raised in an era that people would say, well, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And that kind of harkens back to what the founding fathers used to say, that as long as it doesn't harm me or break my bones, it doesn't matter. You know, like basically stay out of my business. I'm not out hurting people. So that's where that old expression, sticks and stones may break my bones. So it would have really been nice to see some of them rise above. Now, my thoughts on the candidates themselves, without coming out and saying I'm going to vote for this guy, because I really honestly haven't decided. And I do think elections are pretty much just a big Super Bowl every 4 years, and we get all excited like in the Hunger Games, and all of us plebes follow along and go, oh, that was so cool. I got the vote. Yeah, you did. You got the vote for Tweedledee or Tweedledum. Pick one. That's like someone coming to you and say, I'm either going to stab you to death or I'm going to shoot you. Pick one. And it's like, well, that's not fair. It's like, hey, you have a choice, stabbed or shot. Well, I don't really want either. No, stabbed or shot. Can we discuss this? No, stabbed or shot. That's your choice. And then So we've become so numb to this that we're just like, oh, we have two choices. I get to get stabbed or shot. Boy, to be part of the community and to vote, that's an honor. I vote for being shot because it seems like it'd be a little less painful, especially if you shoot me in the head, because pain travels at a slower speed than a bullet, so I won't even feel it. Oh, okay, great. Man, that's a good decision you made. Well, the simple fact is I don't want really any of the yahoos out there. Maybe I will as time goes on, but you know, I do think Rand Paul has a right to be on that stage. I think some of his policies are right on the money. I guess if we could kind of like steal their brains and stick them all into one candidate and filter out all the trash, we might have a pretty decent election and a good candidate to go up against, you know, Tweedledum, whatever the other party puts up there. But there are issues that need to be discussed. And as usual, we as Americans are too busy working our tails off to provide for our family and maybe keep the wolves at bay at the door to where we don't have time to really look into it as thoroughly as some of the pundits, you know, that get paid to do that, like all the talking heads on the news. But they're so in the camp of one party or the other, one candidate or another, we're not getting anything of any substance. You know, we're getting muddy water, but no one's taking the time to run it through a filter. And then when you say something, they're like, well, at least we gave you a drink. Hey, you know, why don't you blow me with that attitude? So it really kind of offends me as an American to see this show of debates and all that. Not that debates aren't good. They can be good. Debating is a good policy and a good way to find out who you want to vote for, but not when it's just showmanship. So I would have liked to seen some of them rise above the petty politics and just go, I don't know anything about that, but here's what I want to do. And here's why I think it'll work. And if we could just do this one thing, I think it would eliminate a lot of the pain and suffering. And then we could take the next step, you know, like baby steps. So the first big important thing to me is to do this. And then we can start going that way. And this is the direction I'm going to be going. You see over there, that's where I'm going to head. So the first step is this one. The second step is that one. And if it starts working, then we'll take the third and fourth step. And then we can recalibrate our compass and see what we want to do. And then I'm going to go here. That would be great. See, because that's when you're following someone and you're lost out on a trail. And everyone's like, I don't know which way to go. This is such a mess. Boy, we're really in the thick of it here. And if somebody would just step up and go, see, I'm gonna go to the top of that hill and get a better vantage point. That's day one. Oh, that's a good idea. What are you going to do when you get there? Why, I don't know. But that's better than where we are here. Oh, okay, you're right. And so you follow people like that. I think we could stop a car on the highway and grab a person and go, you're the president. And he'd be like, okay, I'm not ready for the job. It's like, don't worry, it's not that complicated. And they'd do a better job than what we have. So I would like to see one of the three, but I'm thinking, well, Carly is, she's got a lot of fire. And she's pretty strong-willed. I don't know if she could be a Margaret Thatcher, but I'm afraid of Carly and Ben as being maybe sucked into the machine because the vacuum is quite strong. And if you're not a rocker, you're not anchored to something, you could get sucked in really quick. Like a lot of the new, you know, Congress and Senate that we elected, you know, last time. And it's not that they're turning their back on their constituents. It's just, it's so hard to not just get sucked out the door. So I think of the three, Donald Trump would definitely be the one that would sit there and go, hey, go to hell. This is what we're doing. So I don't think he would get sucked into the machine because he's got his own machine going and he's just like, this is what I'm doing. You people can all just screw yourself. Unfortunately, if he pulled it off, I don't like the overall outcome that I might see from him because he is not a private property kind of guy. He has told us, I play the game to get my way. Well, I don't know if I like your way. I don't see your values as being in line with mine. So even though if you got elected, which you are electable by all the polls and stuff, and I see that you wouldn't get sucked into the machine, the guy I have fighting for me doesn't have my back completely. So I am kind of weary of a person like that. I would rather see a strong moral leader that goes, you know, I don't know everything about everything like Donald Trump says, but I can get the people that do. And the people I'm going to get are going to go that direction. And when I see where they're pointing, I go, that's where I want to end up too. Yeah, that's good. So I can trust in the fact that his guidance is going to take us in that direction. He might go a little left and a little right to go around a swamp or a tree or a cliff, but we're heading that way. Whereas I think Donald Trump's like pointing one way and he says, I'm going to take you this way and we're going to end up there. I'm going to build this great big wall. And that sounds great. Big walls are nice. You know, China did that and Berlin and I was there one around Russia? I don't even know. So I'm not a fan of walls because walls not only keep people out, they keep people in. I think a decent fence and some security and a will to keep them out would be the way to do it, but not a wall. Because once they drop this lid of this big whatever crap fest they got planned for us, we can't get out either. Just like in Berlin, all the people got stuck on the bad side, could no longer come over to the good side. And so Mexico might become the better alternative or Canada. And it's like, no, you can't leave because we got this wall and it's for your security. And they all got rabies and cooties over there. So I'm not a fan of that. I'm a fan of streamlining the system, getting it working right, because it's not that damn hard to run background checks on people. In my business, I can run a background check on someone within a month, and I know more about them than they maybe know about themselves. So I don't want that at all. You know, I would rather have a streamlined system, say, your name is Jaime Juarez, okay, fingerprint, bam, we'll get back with you in a month, stay right here. And then, you know, when you get back to the border, you go, number, 5,000,006. Like, yeah, here, that's me, Jaime Juarez. Hey, you checked out. You're good. Come on in. And you can become a legal citizen, and you can work here and pay taxes and all that. But you cannot vote until you become assimilated and you become an American and learn the language and all that. So we're not cutting them out then. And there's no reason why this whole immigration process couldn't take 2 months, not 10 years. It could happen in a couple of months or even a year. We say we let in 2 million people a year and that's it. The problem with our system isn't that it's broken. It's just whether it takes 10 years or 2 years, it's the people's waiting for the red light to turn green before they get their chance to come in. They're just like, I'm running the light. And they know they can run the light because they're not going to get a ticket. They're not going to get pulled over. So the election, I dread it. You know, it's going to ruin my holidays, really. But so that's that. Okay, so for my tidbit, kind of related to my first one here on elections and borders and all that, because I did get a little sidetracked on immigration and issues that could be talked about. I don't see why they say it's impossible to round these people up. Now, if you think about it, I don't know how many million arrest warrants are written in every little jurisdiction, county, city, state, feds, and all that, just for failure to appear. I mean, if you get a parking ticket and you sign that you've received it and then you don't show up in court, they don't go running around breaking up your family. They just put out an arrest warrant. Now, if you're driving with your family to Disneyland and you get pulled over and you hand the cop your license and you've forgotten all about that stupid parking ticket. In fact, you didn't even know it was that serious. He'll come back and go, sorry, sir, step out of the car. He'll handcuff you, put you in the back seat, tell your wife, sorry, he's got a warrant for his arrest. They don't say, it's just for parking. Don't for, they just go, he's got a warrant for his arrest. We're taking him back to town. Well, what about me and the kids? Well, you can follow me. He's going, you know, I'm going to take him to the jail and then, a deputy from your city is going to come and get him and take him back and you can follow him. And, I'm sorry. Sorry about Disneyland. He wouldn't even say, I'm sorry about Disneyland. He wouldn't even care. He just had an arrest warrant. He enforced that warrant. He arrests you. And off you go. They don't give a damn about your family trip to Disneyland. See how that works? No different than all these illegals. They didn't show up in court. Okay, arrest warrant. That should be the next day. These 200,000 people all across the country didn't show up. Arrest warrants. Boom. Pull them over and you fingerprint them when they're sitting there in jail or whatever, or if they have ID, because they don't all live in the shadows. And then you could get a big bunch of them with this kind of a net, just throwing a big net over them called arrest warrants. Maybe while they're here and you give them a court case, you go, here's your ID. You've got 60 days to show up at this court. Use this identification. You'll be able to drive and not be harassed. You'll be able to get a job. There's a number on it. It's not a social security number. It's just a work number. And you can go about your business. Well, now they have that. They're pretty happy about that. So when they get pulled over, they're like, oh, here's my whatever card. Oh, okay. I see you didn't show up for court. Oh, I didn't know. Okay, well, let's take you to court and figure this out. See, it doesn't have to be kicking down doors and breaking up families and all that. So I think that would be one thing. Now, that's just one of probably 300 million good ideas, because that's how many Americans there are that have a brain that think. There's a lot of ways to do it without disparaging them, without screwing with their lives, without breaking up their family. So there's ways to do it. And there's, like I say, there's probably millions of really good ideas to where we could handle this. But unfortunately, we have no representation in government and they don't listen to you and me because we should just shut up and pay the bill. This is really what they're telling you as an American. You know what? That's really great. And yeah, we told you you had representation, but why don't you go F yourself and shut up and go back to work? Because we don't want to hear it from you. That's what they're telling you. And that's what they're telling me. They're doing it in a really nice way to where when they're done, we're like, oh, good idea. Yeah, let me go back to work. Instead of that being fighting words, you know, we're just like, oh, okay, they've told me to go to hell in such a great way that I'm really kind of looking forward to the trip. So that's, you know, my little tidbit on border and issues. You know, like I said, none of these are silver bullets. It's not like, oh my God, Mark the Prepper Guy just solved it. It's just thoughts that we all have. And if we all came together, we would work it out. And that's how the country was set up. You know, each state being a small laboratory that tried things and did things. And then if it worked, great. Try it in another state. If it doesn't work in two or three states, it's not going to work nationally. Don't do it. But hey, if those people in that state like it and it's working, okay, cool. More power to them. It doesn't need to be one size fits all. And that's what the federal government always likes doing. It's like, well, you know, if it worked for, you know, Bob, it'll work for 300 million people. Even if their name's not Bob. Hell, even if half of them are women. Doesn't care. Oh, what about the kids? Die, it'll all fit. So that's what our politicians tell us every day. Basically, you know, when you hear them talking and you know that they're going totally against the Constitution and the things you have told your representatives to tell them, what they're doing is they're sticking that middle finger out and they're stepping forward to your face and going, F you, you stupid hick. What the hell do you know? They just do it really politely and they pat you on the back while they're picking your pocket and go, that's a great idea. We're gonna look into that. And they're going to walk off going, stupid jackass. Who do these stupid people think they are? Oh, we're the people that tell you what to do. That's who we are. But they know they can do it because we don't sit there and bitch slap them. But, you know, you can't do that. Oh, my God, because he's a politician. Never mind that, you know, they used to have duels back in the old days and you offended someone's honor. There was a duel and someone got shot, unless they both sucked at shooting them crappy pistols they had. So nowadays you can't do that because if you just look at a police officer sideways, you're going to jail for some lame ass bullshit. And trust me, I like the police tolerably. I really respect the sheriff's department a little more than tolerably because I've seen some corruption there. But at least my sheriff is elected by me and tries to represent me. And then you move up into the other alphabet soup, which I have no respect for. So you can't even, you know, everyone's a freaking hero nowadays. I'm sure if you called your kid's teacher an idiot, you're offending a hero. And you could probably go to jail for that, even though the teacher did something stupid. So that's one tidbit on that. I was thinking about something the other day, and I really wish I could remember it, because it had to do with the state of the crap that we live in called American politics. But I should have wrote it down, but it was like 1 a.m. when I thought of it, and I was just way too tired to make a note. So let's talk a little bit about the loss of freedom in America. Well, Mark, what do you mean loss of freedom? We're America. We're the most free country and land on earth. We have more freedom and liberty than most people. I don't know who these people are and what planet they live on, but no, we don't. So to make that point, let's just analyze it. Do you need a permit to change the water heater in your house? And if so, does the person doing the work have to be licensed, bonded, insured, and have a certificate on the wall with a picture of him kissing the ring of the bureaucrat in charge? Yeah, most places now do. Now, not all states have licensing. Like I had to become a licensed contractor to do a profession. I started doing it in 1969. My brother has been laying floor covering before that. My father did floor covering. My uncle did floor covering, and my great uncle do floor covering. But you know what? Before I could sell you floor covering, I needed a license because I had to kiss the ring of a bureaucrat. So that's how it works in my state. Now, if I do something in your house and screw it up, it doesn't really matter. They're not going to help you. That's not what it's set up for. See, it's just set up for their annual, you know, shakedown, basically. So it doesn't help people. But some states don't have that. but you still need permits. You still have planning and zoning. You have associations. I would rather light myself on fire than buy property in a homeowners association and probably just wouldn't do it because I don't like the prospect of setting myself on fire. But when you buy a home in an association, they write up a contract and they go, if you live here, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, you can't do that. I mean, it's 20, 30, 40 pages of what you can't do. Now, you can do a few things, like you can go in and you can sleep and eat and cook. Don't have too many people in there. But that's your home. You can do whatever you want inside there. Just stay in the damn house, because if you come out and you leave your garbage can out in the street more than 20 minutes after the truck has left, we're going to write you a ticket. Now, some neighborhoods become associations because of pressure from lazy-ass neighbors that think they need to tell you how to live. But I think you can get exemptions from that if you vote against it and fight against it. The simple fact is, if it becomes an association and you've been outvoted because now it's the will of the people and there's no representation, then you might as well just put your house on the market because you've lost that battle. Move out, move on. So that's how, you know, these little rights that, you know, we get taken away from us. I mean, we have cities and city councils, and then they pass some zoning law, and it's like, well, what's this? Well, now we're going to tell you, how tall your grass can be, and how much grass, and where, you know, your water and your toilet, and your windows and your doors and your roof and everything. And you're like, hey, wait a minute, I didn't sign on for that. And they're like, well, it doesn't matter. The city council voted for it, and we had to vote for it, because if we didn't, then the state would take away funding, because if the state loses their funding from the federal TIT, then all of a sudden, so you have to comply. So anybody that sits there and tells you or me that we have freedom and liberty in this country are just kind of in a daze and quite naive. Because to me, I would rather have a dangerous freedom than a safe tyranny. And that's what they're giving us, is just a safe tyranny. They've thrown all these safety nets over us, and now we can't get out. We're trapped. And it was all in the name of safety. You know, I have a friend that's a deputy sheriff, and I said, you know, really, that's the big excuse, is public safety. And they're like, oh, yeah, they're really big on public safety. And it's like, oh, really? Do any of them know who I am and how much my bills are and what the names of my kids and grandkids are? Well, no. Well, then why would they care about my safety? See, follow the money. It's all about money. And if they can tell you, well, we're going to write you a ticket every couple of weeks for some bullshit law because it's for your safety, it's about the money. So this leads me into another tidbit that has been rubbing me raw for quite a while. And that is follow the money kind of thing. And all these loss of freedom through little laws that sound really good. Do you know how the tribal leaders in Africa were able to sell their people as slaves? Because see, that's how we didn't just run out and capture all these slaves. No, the English went in, bought these slaves from the tribal leaders, and then, yeah, it looks like it was forced because these people weren't really happy being thrown on slave ships. But the simple fact was their leaders sold them as a product, and then it looks bad. The imagery looks bad. You know, there's all these white people taking slaves away, and there's crying and families being broken up and all that. And so everyone goes all the way right to that image and goes, oh, look at that. That was horrible. Look at all these English people did. Well, nobody steps one more step forward into the problem and goes, why did you enslave your people and sell them as slaves? Oh, now that would be a good question, see, because the leader would say, well, we needed the money. And so what we did was we created all these bullshit laws. And then if they couldn't follow those rules, they became slaves, and we were legally, according to our tribal rules or laws or traditions or whatever, we were allowed to sell them to whoever. They were a product. And it raised money for the tribe, and then we could build a school, which we never built. We just bought more shit and went and conquered more villages so we could sell more slaves. And then you'd go, oh, so I don't owe the African-American people in America retribution. Those jackasses in Africa owe them restitution. Because see, all I did, which I've never owned a slave, my family never owned slaves, we were all too dirt-ass poor to own a slave. So when I say I'm just talking about I, American, Joe American, you know, just bought products. So now if all of a sudden everyone finds out that Apple products are horrible because they're made by slaves and they grind children to, you know, eyeballs to make those crystal clear screens, then all of a sudden it's horrible. Well, nobody sits there and goes, why'd you do that, Apple? They're going to turn to you and go, I can't believe you bought that product. I can't believe you bought a blood diamond. Hey, F you. First of all, I didn't know it was a blood diamond because I don't know jack shit about diamonds. Go take it up with the pricks in that country that sold them. Because that's the problem, see? So it really kind of pisses me off that everyone's mad at us in America for slavery. Not that black people never had slaves, because Egypt had the slaves, which was Moses. And remember that movie with the Parting of the Sea and Charlton Heston, or the new one that's out now? It's all about slaves. The children of Israel were slaves to the people of Egypt, the Pharaoh. Most of Egypt were black. Oh, so black people had slaves before white people had slaves. Yeah, and before that, other people had slaves before those people had slaves, because other people had slaves before those people had slaves. See, because the Mongols had slaves, the Chinese people had slaves. It doesn't matter how far back you go, that was how you got shit done. You went and robbed some village of all their people, and if they didn't, you know, if you didn't conquer them through, you know, your conquest, you know, and totally just annihilate all of them because they put up a good fight, everyone you rounded up became slaves. So there were, you know, whites that had slaves, that were Asian had slaves, that were, let's, you know, all the way down to where now all of a sudden the only people that have ever been pricks in all of human history were the founding fathers, because they had slaves 200 years ago, 230 whatever years ago. But the first slave owner in New York was a black man that went to court and demanded that he get his slave back because his slave hadn't paid off the debt. See, because that's how slavery was started, was debt. So the African tribal leaders got themselves in debt, needed money for whatever cockamamie project they wanted to do in their tribe 300-400 years ago, made up all these rules, and then when people couldn't follow them in the tribe, they just sold them. So all the American people did, and all, you know, through that abolition movement and slavery movement, was buy products given to them by the African government. So you know what? If you want any restitution and retribution and retaliation against the pricks that screwed your forefathers into slavery, go to Africa and demand your farms back from the tribal leaders that took them. Don't get mad at me. We actually had a war to free them. So, you know, kind of, it's easy to sit there and go, ah, he hit me first. No, you weren't looking. That guy hit that guy, which hit that guy, threw a bottle at hit him. He thought you did it, and now he's mad at you, and you're mad at him. Stupid. That's why I guess that one general said you can't fix stupid. So that's my tidbit on that, and maybe I'll go into a deeper discussion on it, which I'm sure will piss off everybody, because God forbid you pick a conversation that has to do with victimization. And if you're on the wrong side of it, you're just a prick. So, oh well, you know, but I have nothing against any people. In fact, most people I don't like. So, you know, figure out the problem and then find the solution. And the problem wasn't America. It was your tribal leaders that screwed you. The country of Africa screwed you, and they owe you property, because I bet some of those ancestors are still around that sold your family into slavery. So F them, go to them and get your money. So that's my thoughts on that, and I'm sure that will rub somebody wrong, but oh well, then, you know, it's just truth. I mean, people that hate blue probably don't like the sky's blue, but it still is. So there you go. Enjoy the apocalypse.